Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Well, I guess these mics are hot. We got a new engineer back there, Dave. Liz, the St. Elizabeth of the booth has moved on. She's now working for Michael Bloomberg, the next president of the United States.
Yes.
Anyway, we're back, Arts and Seizures, and it's Heavy Metal Day. We've all got spring fever, and it is a hard rock summer here. I am so lucky. I cannot believe it. I am really just having a gas here today with our good friend Catherine Turman, back again, author of the heaviest book of all time. Seriously, this fucking thing weighs about 19 pounds. And if you don't think it's the heaviest book of all time, you're just denying the science. It is the Louder Than Hell, the definitive oral history of heavy metal. Good to see you, KT.
Thank you. Great to be here.
All right. And, of course, you Moonlight or Daylight with Alice Cooper as well. And
he's a leading light, yes.
A leading light. And Dean Rispler.
Hi.
Local luminary.
Hi.
And also the heaviest of heavy cats playing with popular rock band The Dictators.
I know that band.
You know that band.
Yeah.
Did you play New Year's Eve?
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't go.
It's okay.
I didn't go.
We only play in New York New Year's Eve now.
Damn it.
A good payday for us.
I hate
that's very rock and roll of you.
Yeah. I hate playing on New Year's Eve more than like fucking, you know, Poison. It's like, I just found my
Poison the band?
Poison the actual thing that makes you turn blue, strychnine. I just think, like, you know, people tend to be drunk and not paying attention to the band, and then you can't get home. And every time we've ever played at New Year's Eve, it's been a disaster.
It's been great for us.
Well, God bless you, son.
Yeah, it's been great.
God bless you. So, hey, we all went to see Black Sabbath this week.
I went twice.
You went twice, because yes. You are the heaviest cat. The heaviest cat I ever did see. So what do you think?
Well, I have to say something. When they first came on, there's no spoiler alerts. Well, maybe there are, but anyway.
It's done. I mean, the tour's over for now, so.
But, okay, so they opened with the first song off their first record, and they had the church bells and the rain sounds, mm-hmm. and I almost started to cry. Yeah. I know that's not metal, but I was moved.
No crying in metal. I was pretty moved, too.
Well, you'd be surprised.
I got the big warm fuzzy. No, man, it was great, and it's you know, I consider nostalgia sort of a pathology, but this wasn't that thing, you know? It was just so fucking good. It exceeded all expectations, Black
yes.
Sabbath. I knew I was going to have fun, but I didn't expect it to be that good. I mean, they sounded great.
Well, the main reason for that I think it was amazing, both nights were amazing. Same set list, by the way. But,
yeah, and I want to hear if either night was better for any reason.
I thought last night was better, actually.
Because you were drunker?
Because we weren't there?
No, not particularly. It's because the crowd seemed more into it.
Saturday night.
And also, I had seen some footage of earlier shows from this tour, and Ozzy was really bad. Like, he sounded awful, and I was so worried when we went to the show that he was going to be awful.
I thought he was on good form. I could really scrutinize it and tell you a couple places. Maybe he was a bit pitchy, but I thought he was fucking doing a great job. Or whoever was singing was doing a great job.
It was
the guy behind
singing.
That black velvet curtain who he actually introduced and who I found out is Rick Wakeman's son.
Well, that was a weird thing because they introduced the offstage keyboard player. And they've used an offstage keyboard player forever. Jeff Nichols was the guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it was weird that he goes, okay, we're going to introduce our keyboard player, and the guy pops out like with a Punch and Judy show or Kukla Fry and Otley or something.
Yeah, he came out literally behind curtains.
Like, yeah. Hey, you know, I'm the guy doing the church bell on the synth.
Yes.
And they went away.
They sort of have to do that now because there's been so many rumors about Ozzy having the under-tent vocalist.
Right.
So there was just recently an article
from
one of the LA magazines, and it was about all about that guy and other people who tour with bands behind curtains or
support musicians, secret
musicians. So they kind of just came out with it and said, oh, well, you know, and even the guy was cool. The guy's like, listen, on those records, Ozzy's voice is like tripled on some of those songs. So right. It's like it makes sense to have a, you know, some backing stuff going on. But that was old Ozzy. That was old Ozzy. Yeah. And Ozzy, someone must have given him the right cortisone shots for the last two nights, last three nights, because he was on fire.
I thought he sounded great. And not only that, I was astonished at how good Tony Iommi sounded.
My God,
I mean, like,
great.
Flawless guitar playing.
Well, the solo for Dirty Women, which was a great obscure track to put into the set. The solo for that was worth the whole price of admission.
And I think that was the only oddball song where, you know, people might not have expected
that. I didn't expect to see Hand of Doom. I mean, I didn't think that was like a live staple for them.
I love that song.
I think they played either six songs off Paranoid, yeah. I think.
Well,
yeah.
The thing about Sabbath is, I mean, for me anyway, I mean, Dean, you go deep and you're a consummate metalhead. I mean, I'm not even a heavy metal fan per se.
Yes.
I like hard rock.
Get out of here.
We've had this conversation.
Yes,
I like hard rock.
But we like you anyway.
Oh, thank you. You know, and Satan. I like Satan.
Yeah, Satan's good.
But, I mean, I like Black Sabbath. I like Deep Purple. I love AC/DC, who I saw this summer, who were also incredibly good. Like really, really, like, boy, oh boy, it was an expensive ticket, but I got every penny's worth.
Well, you know what? We have to address that both AC/DC and Sabbath are touring without a core original member.
True.
And
without two core original members in the case of AC/DC.
Yes, exactly.
Not to mention that they changed singer. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah.
You know,
but
somewhere
I'm saying,
in midstream.
I mean, yes. This is the first time that Malcolm hasn't been.
How many people have been in Black Sabbath? It's like 35.
Everyone in this room, probably.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Well, Tony Martin was on five albums.
Tony
which
Martin
is
was in it. Glenn,
that's unbelievable.
Glenn Hughes was in it for a while.
Records. Tony Martin.
And actually, I
he sounds like a lounge singer. I mean, the name Tony Martin sounds like a lounge singer.
Hi, Tony, if you're listening, I know him. And weirdly, I got to take him to Lucky 13 one night, and we got a lot of free drinks off his notoriety.
Great.
So
it's great.
His notoriety being five Black Sabbath records, and no one knows.
Yes,
who he
and
is.
Still sleeping on my couch.
The last time. Saw Black Sabbath. The only other time I saw Black Sabbath, Ian Gillan from Deep Purple.
Yeah, Born Again Tour.
Was the Born Again Tour.
Bev Evans.
Bev Evans.
Well, that's
you know, another story.
That's one of my favorite stories. Still dining out on the I Have Fun from my book, I Have Fun Everywhere I Go. Mm-hmm. We went to see, it was a costume contest at Tower Records, and to go, Black Sabbath were the judges. This was the Born Again Tour.
Yes.
So it was Ian Gillan singing, it was Geezer and Tony, the original Sabbath members, and Bev Bevan. Formerly of Electric Light Orchestra on the Move, was playing drums. I mean, I don't know where these guys, they see each other at Boy Scout meetings or something. It's like, hey, what are you doing hanging out for July and August, Bev? But that was the lineup. And I went.
Well, that's how we meet at Boy Scout meetings. So,
exactly. Yeah.
I interrupted you. Bev Bevan playing with Ian Gillan.
Yeah. And we went. It was funny because I went with my friend Dave Reagan Youth.
Dave Insurgent.
Dave Insurgent, my friend from Reagan Youth. And we dressed up in like totally psychedelic acid head kind of garb versus like everybody else was in complete black, gothic, and you know, and had their hair spiked up. They loved us. They ate us up. We had our pictures taken for circus and whatnot. And Dave had a Bible with him. Someone had given it to him that day. On the street, some Christian trying to convert Dave gave him a Bible in Washington Square Park. And we got there and we gave Ian Gillan the Bible and he signed it. And Dave's like, oh man, you were in Deep Purple. That's so cool, right? And they loved us. And then Geezer signed and it was great. And then Tony Iommi signed. It was great. And Dave said to Bev Bevan, he goes, hey, you're Bev Bevan. And I said, yeah. And he goes, you were in Electric Light Orchestra, right? And he goes, yeah. And Dave says, well, you're too soft. You can't sign my Bible. Sorry, dude.
Now, I'm not religious at all, but isn't that completely blasphemous to sign a Bible?
They loved it. They thought this, you know, a couple of acid heads. I mean, we were wearing like space helmets and carrying these big African, you know, sticks and stuff. And
awesome.
I mean, it was just completely out of control. And they all got tickets to see Black Sabbath. I mean, we walked away with like three pairs of tickets to see Sabbath. That was the tour they had the Stonehenge that wouldn't fit through the door.
Yes.
It was the opposite of the Spinal Tap thing. Where it was tiny.
I don't know that story.
Well, they had a Stonehenge designed for that show, but apparently it was too big for some of the arenas. They couldn't
get
it.
So on the napkin,
it stayed on the truck for some of those shows. Well, you've seen Sabbath a lot of times, I'm imagining.
No, I've. I haven't. I wish I had. And when I was younger, when they were touring with Dio, I didn't go. I was too young.
My parents wouldn't let me.
No, my parents wouldn't let me go. And then
I thought if you lived in Long Island, you sort of had to go see Dio.
Yeah, you know what? I never saw Dio either, which is a big mistake in my life. And my biggest mistake was sleeping on the Heaven and Hell show when they played the last show they played at Radio City. I totally slept on it. I was like, oh, I should go to that. And then I totally forgot about it, slept on it, and then the day it happened, it was like, oh, it's sold out. I'm like,
I felt like
I was there. Yeah, we discussed, that's when they did the DVD from that show.
Yes, I wish I'd gone to that. But I'm a huge fan of the Dio years
era.
I think all those records are great.
I mean, I bought these tickets so far in advance when they went on sale, and I was like a little kid. They were on like my bulletin board every day. I was looking at them, and I was like, already like in my mind, I was already rolling joints for the show.
But I just read my favorite Ozzy quote that I've never saw before. Ozzy's quoted as saying when Black Sabbath was touring with Dio and Vinny Appice, he said, "You can't call that Black Sabbath. They should just call it Geezer Butler and the Three Italians."
We love
That's
you all.
Pretty good.
Three Italians.
That's
you know, it's
good.
Funny. What
Sounds
you
like
just,
Tony Martin's band.
What you just said about the having the ticket. I have tickets like that now. I didn't rush out and buy, but I rushed onto the internet to buy Iggy with Josh Homme from. Mm-hmm. So I don't. I can't remember what the Iggy record's called, but.
I'm sure it's very heavy with those guys.
Well, I mean, I went to see them, Crooked Vultures, and it was one of the best shows I've seen in my life. So I thought, all right, I'm not missing this one because it'll be short-lived.
Was John Paul Jones in that band?
Yes he was. Yeah. And Dave Grohl, right?
Dave Grohl? Yeah,
Dave Grohl. Yes.
And my old band.
The omnipresent Dave Grohl.
Yes.
My old band.
Are we sick of him?
And my old band, The Brutlow.
Unequivocally,
opened that show.
What?
I wasn't in the band at the time. I had already left. My old band, The Brutlow, who were on... Mm-hmm. TP Records. They were they opened. Oh, they were on Small Stone Records as well. They opened them Crooked Vultures show.
Nice. So wait, did anyone think? I will be embarrassingly admitting this, that I got a free ticket to Sabbath. How much were the tickets? What was the ticket price?
I got a pretty cheapie. It lit up on my Facebook feed, Citibank Day, whatever. And I think they were only $65 each.
That's good. We were
sitting kind of upstairs, but it was like only $65. I couldn't push that button fast enough to get a pair of tickets.
Because, you know, I thought 90 minutes is pretty damn short.
It was a little perfunctory, I thought.
And, you know, the encore of Paranoid, I mean, expected and awesome, but still just...
They could have thrown one more out. I mean, I'm telling you, I wanted to see AC/DC. It just goes and goes and goes. And just when you think they can't do any more cannon fire and more pyrotechnics. I mean, they are not cutting pennies on the fucking dynamite at AC/DC.
Right.
And they're coming around. That was a stadium tour. And oddly, that was the first time I've seen a show in a stadium. I mean, I've seen lots of arena shows, but nothing outdoors, no
I saw
JFK
the Stones
Stadium.
In L.A. at the not the sports arena, the Coliseum.
I went to Wrigley Field, and, you know, it was okay, but, you know, it's 55,000 people is a lot of people for a blues band.
Wait, so what do we think, what are the Sabbath guys going to do? Obviously, Ozzy has an established solo career, but Tony and Geese,
Tony's in bad shape, right?
Well, I mean, he's been fighting cancer, but he sounded great and looked great, as we
amazing.
Said.
Who you would never know. He was, I mean, just phenomenally on. And the tone of the guitars and everything. I mean, it was just like A++++, I thought.
And you know what I enjoyed was watching the screen, which I admit I did, just to see Tony's fingertips. You know, like, how does he feel through those fake fingertips? That's the coolest thing.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
And the bass, I mean, the bass Geezer. I mean, he doesn't get
that
named.
That was the best bass tone I ever saw anyone with live.
And an arena show, it was incredible. And he doesn't get credit for like being the greatest rock and roll bass player of all time. I don't know why he's not named.
He's getting named
the same
quite a bit.
You know, the same level as like Jack Bruce or John Paul Jones.
I think he gets named quite a bit. A lot of guys name him as influence. I mean,
but this tour is going to go on for a while. I think that's what they're doing next is. You know, I felt too. I bought my tickets to be the last show in America ever, and then like next day is like, oh, go see them this summer. You know, like Ray Jones, like
Jones Beach.
Oh, really?
Jones Beach.
Yeah, I think they're going to just milk out this tour as long as it could
I don't know. I mean, I have to say, I did get offered a ticket to Saturday, and I chose not to go because I knew it would be the same set. I mean, I don't know. Did I make the wrong choice? You said it was better.
It was amazing. I thought it was better. I thought both nights were amazing. I think both nights were amazing. I think we had a better time because we were closer to the stage. We had a better seats, and also I think the crowd on Saturday night was much more into it. It seemed like a more where we were sitting in the first night was kind of the grandpa section.
It was Saturday night, and by Saturday,
isn't the whole arena the grandpa section?
Well,
but I must say I saw a lot of little girls
Mecca.
With their dads, and that made me happy.
The most famous arena in the world.
Yeah.
When will Cosmo Demonic be playing at Madison Square Garden?
I don't know. I don't know. We haven't been offered a show yet, so.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and why don't you tell us about Cosmo Demonic, and we're going to hear Dean's extremely heavy band.
Well, Cosmo Demonic is fairly new band. It features David Bosler on vocals and guitar, formerly of Silver Summit and a couple other bands, and it's really heavy, blackened, psychedelic doom.
All right, what are we going to hear?
I think we're going to hear the first track is Kali.
Kali. All right. You're listening to Arts and Seizures. It's Heavy Metal Day here in Bushwick. Dave, the engineer, give it a twirl.
Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Cow. Oh, there we go. That Roberta's bumper is as heavy as Cosmo Demonic, almost. We're back. Arts and Seizures. Mike Edison here with Dean Rispler and Catherine Turman, author of Louder Than Hell, the heaviest book of all time. And we just got a call in from our good friend Kenny Aronoff, drummer to the stars, the hardest hitting man in show business. Kenny, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, buddy. How are you doing?
We're doing good. We're just talking about how good Black Sabbath was this week. You played with Tony Iommi, right?
Yeah, I did a record with Tony Iommi and Glenn Hughes from Deep Purple. We were trying to start a power trio, and it was a killer record. We did it in Wales, but when the record was done, that's exactly the moment where Sharon Osbourne wanted to bring back Black Sabbath. So you do the math. You do the math. I mean,
damn you, Sharon.
Yeah, I mean, hey, man, I don't blame her. I mean, you know, Black Sabbath versus a power trio playing in bars, there you go.
Well, can you still make that power trio happen? That sounds like something the world needs.
Well, you know, I've been emailing just recently Tony. We stayed in touch ever since. And I even said, man, I'll come over there and on my own dime and let's make another record. And, you know, I mean, he really would love to. He's very enthusiastic to do that sort of thing. But, you know, his life has changed quite a bit. I mean, he's trying to finish his tour, and he's dealing with, you know, his health issues. So, I don't know. I mean, he's great, man. He's the sweetest guy in the world. So So I would love to see that.
So we were all talking too. It's three original members of Sabbath out on this tour, minus Bill Ward. What do you think went down with that, Kenny? I mean, there's a lot of talk, a lot of interchatter on the web.
Machine. Yeah, I know. It's weird. It's like, you know, all I can say is a good response in general is there's always two sides of the story. It's the side I hear is, you know, he got screwed, you know, but I don't know all the details. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, we don't know. Maybe he pissed everybody off so much in the past, they didn't, you know, he's being punished for that. I'm really shooting from the hip.
Do you think do you think he was physically able to do the rigors of an arena tour?
Probably not, but you know, probably not, you know. Yeah. I mean, I remember I'd heard at one point when he was on tour with them that the tech had to beat his back, you know, to tell him where the tempo was. But, you know, it's kind of one of those sad things because, you know, he's obviously clean and sober. He looks really healthy. He looks great. And, I don't know, maybe it would have been cool if there's some way they could have had him out there, you know, do something. You know, like I've done sticks before, you know, when a couple times the drummer couldn't make it. And they had the original bass player come out and do like three songs, and the audience loved it because he was the original guy.
I think that's what Guns N' Roses are planning to do
with
Steven Adler.
I'm horrified.
Do you know what? Because I wanted that gig bad. But I mean, I did an Iggy Pop record, Brick by Brick, and I got really close with Slash and Duff back in the heyday. And I was actually texting Slash, you know, when this was all going down. And you know, I think that's what's going to happen. And there's nobody. I'd heard that Axl really wanted that feel of Steven Adler because he had that thing, but is he capable of doing a long show? That was the question. But right now, you know, I think that would be phenomenal if they brought him out and did like three or four songs. He's got that the original swagger and feel and looseness of Guns N' Roses.
I'll tell you, that's why I loved Guns N' Roses, that first record when it came out, because to me, of all those the bands of the era, that, you know, hair metal, hair bands, whatever, they, to me, understood Aerosmith. They understood the Rolling Stones.
Everybody, oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They had, yeah. You know, listen, I don't like heavy metal. We've said this. I like hard rock. I like rock and roll.
Yeah.
To me, the roll part is always more important than the rock part. And they sort of got that where most bands didn't at the time.
Yeah, they had the swinging dirtbag vibe.
You know, yeah, well,
hey, you know what?
The
you
swinging dirtbags.
I tried not to like them. I really tried not to like them because I was like, these guys are imitating. Hey, by the way, can I swear on this radio station?
Oh, yeah.
Please do.
Please.
Oh, okay, good. Fuck. Fuck, 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 shit, fuck. Okay.
All right. No, Kenny Aronoff, everybody.
I tried to fucking not like him because I thought, Jesus Christ, they're just trying to imitate, you know, the swagger of Aerosmith and the Stones. But you know what? I mean, they what they did was, in hindsight, they really kept that original cool shit alive. They just had a new audience, you know. It was great.
Yeah,
I mean, they had hook lines, they had melodies, they had choruses. They were dangerous. They were like, you know, they did drugs. They would come into your town. They would take your money, your women, and everything.
Well, all right,
Kenny, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
All right, you still playing with John Fogerty?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Iconic. Yep.
I just saw you, I guess about 6 months ago, I think it was at the Beacon. It was amazing.
Oh yeah, those shows are great. What a great place to see Bogart. Yeah, we got this now, we've upped it a little bit. We've got, were there like TV screens, were there monitors there?
Yes, yes.
And all that shit.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very modern for Creedence.
Yeah.
It was a great show.
Yeah, well, we're doing the thing now. We brought it into Vegas, and it's the same sort of thing, but a little bit more of what you saw.
I love
but
the fact,
still, you know, song after song after song after song after song.
Yeah. Dean, I got to tell you, I've been. I should plug Kenny's new book, which I've been helping him out a little bit with, which is called Sex, Drums, and Rock and Roll. It'll be out this fall. But one thing I love is that Fogerty still likes to rehearse Proud Mary. Still working on it.
Yeah.
Well, you're not just, by the way, Mike, for all the listeners, Mike's doing more than just a little bit of help. We're glued hip to hip when working. I was up till 3 in the morning last night. I'm so anal, I have to read every word, every paragraph, so we're going back and forth, and Mike is kindly putting up with me wanting to, you know, revise. Meanwhile, the deadline technically is March 1st, next Tuesday, but I'm the one who's, like, being so anal that I need... You know, I like to, you know...
It's all right, Kenny. Like, whose bright idea was it to put two drummers together to write a book anyway? All right, listen, Kenny Aronoff, everybody. Kenny, I'm going to talk to you very soon. We're going to get this book done. We're going to hand it in, and we're going to get you on the show in person very soon.
All right, buddy. All right, take care, you guys. Enjoy Sunday, and I'll speak to you soon, Mike.
All right, nice great Kenny Aronoff. They say, you know, Taylor from the Foo Fighters says, if you want to hear Kenny Aronoff play the drums, just turn on the radio. He really is amazing.
That must be nice.
I mean, he's played on, like, pop hits, you know, every Meatloaf record since the first ones.
He's the modern
also,
Hal Blaine.
He is the modern Hal Blaine. Yeah. Exactly. We're trying to think who's the most recorded drummer of all time, and I think Hal Blaine's got to be it.
Hal Blaine is it.
But Kenny is, like, right there.
It's, and then, sadly, Grohl is going for it.
It's crazy.
Oh, dear.
Oi, fucking Vey. Hey, you know, since the last time we were together, we lost one of our heroes that I did want to talk about. Lemmy has moved on to the next gig in the sky, and man, that hit fucking hard.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Antonin Scalia.
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
that would have been. Too
he
great
was
guess.
Heavy. He was
Scalia.
The, he was.
And
the, he was the wrong heavy.
Oh, you were talking about Ian Kilmister.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I interviewed him twice in the last 6 months of his life, and his voice on the phone, I mean, you could barely understand him. He was so, so weak sounding.
Yeah.
And, you know, I talked to him. I was one of the first people to talk to him after he canceled a couple shows in Austin. You know, he walked off stage. He's like, oh, just for the fans, if they paid their money, I can't let them down. And that was it. He just... He wouldn't stop because of the fans.
Really, really, really inspiring. I mean, like, unbelievable, right? And when you say he started drinking vodka for health reasons.
Yes, I know. And just a kind, humble, awesome, just a real guy. And also, surprisingly, you know, I guess there was the one article where, you know, he slept with more than 1,000 women, whatever, who cares? But he was great to the band Girl School, always toured with them, yep. Apparently, I didn't realize this till the eulogy, which I watched streaming on YouTube, was he was raised, I believe, just by his mother, no father in his life, and he was really respectful towards women, and he was just a fucking cool guy.
Yeah, and a great underrated songwriter, underrated bass player.
So what do we think of the Grammys tribute?
Oy.
I didn't watch it.
It's your boss. Can you be honest?
No. Well, yeah. All right. Here's something I'll pose to the panel here. You know, I love Alice. He's great. I think what tied them together is they both hung out in... they were both Hollywood vampires hanging out at the Rainbow, drinking their fucking lives away. Alice got sober. But who would you have rather seen sing? I couldn't think of who I would have rather sing Ace of Spades besides... I mean...
Ozzy!
No.
I just hear these stories about when Motorhead was opening up for, I guess, Ozzy. It wasn't Black Sabbath. It was
right.
The Ozzy Osbourne band. And, you know, just this, like, crazy, I mean, talk about Lemmy and how much he loved him, but they would just sort of get in the car and drive and not shower and, like, just real filthy rock and roll animals. And Ozzy loved them. They were, you know, supposedly a great tour and very, very, very connected.
I wonder if Iggy could have done it. I mean, you need someone who's super punk.
Iggy would be great.
Well, Iggy should have been the one doing the Bowie tribute.
Oh,
another, yes.
And if it was up to me in Dreamland, it would have been the Damned doing Motorhead tribute.
I don't think the Grammys are ready for Iggy yet. It's just
the Grammys aren't ready for anything. If the Grammys had, listen, no disrespect to Lady Gaga, I think she's very talented in her own way, but I really think that whole Bowie thing should have been.
It was a cacophonous.
It should have been like Iggy Pop and Ian Hunter. And people who were he wrote songs with and songs for
Brian Eno
would have been great. All that would have been great.
Just one good version of Heroes, not this like this mix and match Bowie on 45. I mean, it was like it happened so fucking fast. I didn't even know what the hell was happening. And you know, but now all these people who weren't really there and didn't really understand Bowie in the first place can now feel like they're part of this experience through the magic that is the Grammys. Yep. You know what? Corporate rock still sucks.
Yep, it sure does.
Yeah, I kind of actually sure weirdly does. After Bowie died, I feel like I'm one of the only people who he didn't change my life. I mean, I love him and worship him, but everyone's like, he let me be me. He was this, he was that for me. I'm like, I just thought he was. Now I'm actually kind of thinking, all right, what did I miss?
I don't know that he changed my life, but there was definitely a point where he made it okay to get your freak on, and
right,
you
that's
know,
what I'm saying.
And it was sort of like, yeah. but punk rock had the same effect. It was like, right. I mean, you know, through my life, it was these things that said, okay, be yourself. It's okay to be a weirdo. And I mean, Bowie was such a constant in my life. I mean, I never stopped playing his records. But who think of somebody else? The Stones, The Who, Black Sabbath, I mean, Motorhead, Iggy Pop, whomever, who ran like 8 or 9 records in a row that are unbelievably good, that showed a true like artistic evolution.
Yes.
And I'll just start with Hunky Dory, you know, through Ziggy Stardust, Diamond Dogs, Aladdin Sane, Station to Station, maybe his best record. And then to come after that, to, you know, continue on with, you know, Heroes and Low and Lodger.
Trilogy,
and then Scary Monsters, which is like this guitar-heavy, like unbelievable masterwork. And I like his last records. I thought The Next Day was
great. I thought Let's Dance was great.
That was,
and that was like a pop blow-up record that at the time got annoying on MTV, but great songs.
And then Tin Machine. Oh.
I wanted to like them so much.
Right.
I still try to like them. Like sometimes in my darkest moments, I go on YouTube and look at the Tin Machine because I like the idea of David Bowie being in a guitar band. But yeah, it wasn't so good.
I thought your favorite was the his collaboration with Mick Jagger on Dancing in the Streets.
Oy.
Isn't that your favorite video?
Man, boy. And with that, as always, it has been the fastest half hour on
the internet
today.
It's already
over? It's that fast. It's like,
wow.
I know, there's some songs.
We didn't even touch that pizza.
Well, by the way, this is a new pizza on the Roberta's menu. It's called Achilles Last Stand, and I ordered it special because, you know what I always say, Dean? If you claim to be a Led Zeppelin fan and you don't like the record Presence, you're not really a Led Zeppelin fan. You're just a classic rock idiot.
Are they going to make a Royal Orleans with sausage?
That's a fantastic
Hots
idea.
Hots on for nowhere? How do you... How
Presence, my favorite.
How's the drum goes on Achilles Last Stand? Can someone air drum?
It's the same thing.
Immigrant Song Only Heavier.
Yay. I'll drink to that.
All right, we're going
to
come back soon, you guys.
Okay. Yes.
Catherine,
I'm not coming back.
Please go out.
I've had enough.
In The Dictators.
I've had enough of this, Mike.
Be nice to you. I'm going to play one more of your songs.
Okay.
All right, and it's going to be so fucking heavy, it's going to break the station.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, don't forget, Catherine's book is Louder Than Hell. It really is absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. It's 7 pounds of metal.
It is awesome sauce. And we'll see you guys next week right here on Arts and Seizure. Let's get to the pizza. And
we're going to hear Cosmo. Thank you, Roberta's.
Cosmo Demon.
Yeah, I know this band.
listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.